again.
You can tell the cities which have legalization because you just have to walk in the city. Just like walk down the
street.
You
can smell it.
Smell it. It's like that. Now the smell of Toronto is the smell of marijuana.
Honestly, I would rather smell that than cigarette smoke at this point. And I used to be a cigarette smoker, but man, we went to a concert. It was that metal concert we went to. And all the concerts I go to, because you can't smoke anywhere in California. It's like, I don't know where people go to smoke because you can't smoke in any public places. You have to be, I don't know, 100 yards away from a building or something. You have to be basically standing out in the middle of a pasture someplace.
Forest.
Yeah, and you can't in public parks, in public open spaces, you know, the fire danger and all this stuff. But anyways, you can't smoke anywhere. But we went to that concert, and it was the only concert I'd been to in years where people were smoking cigarettes in there. And it was like, what? Oh my God, I couldn't hardly breathe. It was so, so strong. It was just... That's intense.
Did you smell your clothes the day
after? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Right? I don't know. I've become like this.
You went somewhere and you were with people who were smoking inside?
Smoking cigarettes inside. I know. It was so weird. I literally don't even see people outside anywhere smoking cigarettes. Occasionally you'll see somebody vaping, but cigarettes have become basically, I literally see people smoking weed more often than I do cigarettes.
Yeah, especially in places where weed is legal.
Yeah, and that smell doesn't bother me too much.
Actually, didn't New Zealand just pass a law which is going to protect future generations from? Like, they're literally like banning cigarettes for even future generations.
Oh, wow, I don't know.
Not even going to sell them. They figure there's no good use to them. I don't think there ever was a really good use to cigarettes, was there?
They just got, it's just sad. They got people addicted to this and convinced them that it was like, at one point it was a healthy thing. There were doctors recommending cigarettes, you know, and it's just the fact that even just being addicted to anything, the fact that you're just willingly just giving your money over on a continual basis to some big corporation that's just using you. It's sad.
Just to literally sell you a chemical, which you know you're addicted to and you absolutely need. And then the transfer mechanism is the most disgusting mechanism in the world. Yeah. You literally have to inhale smoke. And this is coming from a guy who smoked for like 25 years.
Yeah.
Yes. So now when I pass people who smoke, I judge them.
I know. Isn't that funny? Because I remember when I was a smoker, I'm like, oh, these damn smoking laws, they're trying to get into, and this was back in like the, you know, late 80s, you know, and here it is now. They've even banned certain types of vaping, I guess, in, at least in San Francisco. I know that they can't sell any flavored, I think they can sell vaping of certain types. They can't sell like the Juuls, those little ones, because those are the ones that all the kids are in school. They were making YouTube videos sneaking their Juul. Everyone has a Juul vape pen or whatever it's called.
Well, they were selling it as a healthy alternative to smoking.
Yeah.
So quite like we shouldn't have listened to them in the 50s when doctors were being like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, this cigarette, Marlboro, is the choice of 3 out of 5 doctors. Choose the smooth taste of Marlboro.
I have a feeling that vaping is probably a better alternative, but still, you're getting addicted to something that, and you're willingly giving your money to this corporation that's just taking your money by getting you addicted. That just, to me, is like, it's slavery, kind of.
I was interested in vaping until I learned about popcorn lung, or like all of the downsides that vaping has, and the unique downsides of vaping that even cigarette smoke doesn't have. Like, I mean, you understand what you're doing with the cigarette smoke, but I think it's the artificial flavors is the biggest kind of thing, because in order to flavor it and make it taste good, it wreaks havoc with your sinuses. It can lead to
they've got like bubble gum and all these kid friendly flavors is really what they were marketing the vaping to.
And I can see how the people who are weed smokers wanted to move on to vaping. It's certainly less, you know, offensive, and it's easier to kind of like, it's easier to sneak a vape into a nightclub than it would be a pack of cigarettes and then light those bad boys up. But that's sorry, you're telling me something which I have not seen happen in at least 20 years. I remember
smoking.
Maybe, Yeah. When I was just out of high school and doing like the nightclub thing and whatnot, there was still those days that you would go and you'd come back and you'd reek of cigarette smoke and you'd just be like, yeah. And then there was a brief period where they tried to keep cigarettes indoors, but they had like separate smoking areas. So it was a glass off part of the restaurant.
Cage.
They used to, airports. They would invest in smoking sections, like these little smoking. So you'd go to the donut shop and you'd have to open, and then you'd open the door to the smoking section.
Horrible.
It was just like a hot box. All these sad, sad people there. Yeah, no.
I think
I'm
that
very happy those days.
But I think that it sort of, I guess, with that metal concert I went to, is because I think now smoking, especially among younger people, might be seen as just an act of rebellion, because smoking is so become so taboo anymore, and you really can't smoke anymore. That like kind of it's more flipping your finger at the establishment to smoke than it is to smoke weed.
I like how when you watch like a music video or a movie and you see someone smoke, you're like, ooh.
That's the bad guy.
Oh, he's clearly the bad guy.
Well, you know, they're legalizing shrooms in a lot of places now. Colorado has legalized them, and I think they're doing that here in California too.
A lot of it's a space which I'm actually very interested in, and I think there's a lot of future, I think, with psychedelics and the human journey and learning more about yourself and pain and grief and all of the rest through use of this stuff. So I'm all for it. Have you never tried mushrooms?
No, I did years ago. Sure. Yeah. I had a couple of good experiences and one or two bad experiences, but mostly they were okay. I wasn't really
so,
into it.
So tell me more about the drugs that you've done and which ones you've done.
Well, now I just stick to meth.
No, well, that's true. I mean, you want the biggest bang for your buck, and nothing is going to get you that. And plus, your house is super clean after you do meth, and yeah.
Well, this has really become an off-color joke that I have is when, because we would watch this show on TV. It's called Intervention, and it's on TLC, which is the trashiest channel of them all. You know, that's where they have like the 600-pound life show and on all this stuff. Well, they have this one called Intervention where the whole point is to get these people off of drugs, which of course is the thing that encapsulates it and makes it elevated. But really what we want to do is see these junkies falling down and injecting things in their arms and everything. But they always have this, this kind of a thing is they always say, well, I started out on prescription pills and I couldn't get the prescriptions any longer and it got more expensive. And so eventually I just had to switch to heroin. And
yes.
So that's kind of my running joke now. Every time somebody gets a medication for anything in our house, I'm like, well, you know, it'd be cheaper if you just switched to heroin.
I never got not high enough on like weed or mushrooms or like the lighter drugs to ever be like, I need more than this.
I need to put something in my vein.
I need to just sit in a chair for 8 hours and just sleep.
Oh.
Cause yeah, I mean, it takes, you really want to tune out from some stuff when you're inviting that. And actually, you know what? This leads to an interesting conversation about perception and whatnot. Cause I was watching your most recent video, the project video, which you now put on YouTube.
The project videos are doing well.
Literally one of the only people on the platform. full length, interesting project videos. However, I noticed when you sat on the beautiful stool chair that you had made, you have a tattoo on your calf.
Oh, yeah.
Or on your leg. Yes. I never knew you had a tattoo. Tell me about your tattoos.
I've only had it since 2018, I guess. I designed it myself, and it's a stylized 26.2. It was to honor the first marathon I ran, 26.2 miles. And so it's made to kind of look like flames. It's kind of like speed, even though I was never fast at running a marathon. But I thought, well, the logical place for that is on my leg, you know. And so that's the only tattoo I have. I'd like to get another tattoo. I really would, but I it's something that is, I need something that it just has to spark that desire to like, this is something I just really want to commemorate, or I need to have this on there. I mean, there's plenty of things I like that would be cool, but then I have to think, yeah, but am I going to really kind of regret this, you know, 10 years from now or something?
Has that mindset changed now? Because I remember I always used to be that guy. I used to look at people with tattoos and be like, I'm glad I don't have tattoos because I don't know if I would like it in 10 years.
Yeah.
And I've now known people who have had tattoos for 30 years and 40 years, and they still are like, yeah, no, I still like my tattoos.
Yeah.
As much as maybe you think I shouldn't like it. Yeah, no, I'm still down with it. So I've kept putting it off and putting it off. And now I really am at the, well, now that I've seen Steve Ramsey, I'm definitely getting one. But yeah, no, I'm at the point, and it's same as you. I want something to be like important and significant.
Well, that was the hardest thing. It took me a long time. And I searched on, you know, the internet looking for like running tattoos, marathon tattoos. And there's a lot of really bad ones and just dumb ones and maybe a guy running or something. And and I did all of this stuff and I thought, well, maybe I could incorporate the Golden Gate Bridge, and I couldn't find anything. And I thought, you know, I should just design it. Hell, I'm a graphic designer. It's what I did for a living. And so I just kind of played around with it. And then I thought the 26.2 would just be a small part of something larger. And then I thought, well, no, maybe just the number itself, just kind of, it lends enough to people could ask questions about. And then I started stylizing it and making it kind of look like it's flames. And so now when you look at it, you really can't read it unless you get up really close. Yeah. And nobody asks what the tattoo is. It's just not a thing. I mean, would you ask somebody what the tattoo is, unless you were somebody who knew them, if you knew them? But yeah, so it's not something. And I just think it looks cool, and I absolutely love it. I would not change a thing with it. I would like to get another tattoo. I just don't know if anything is that significant in my life, like running a marathon was, to kind of warrant that, you know?
So let's say you do find something that does warrant you getting another tattoo. Where on your body would you put?
I'd like to get one on my arm where people could actually see it.
Fair enough. Yeah. Like a bicep or just up by your shoulder or something like that. So I was thinking about that as well. And my friend Steve, when we were in high school, started getting sleeves tattooed. And he did a theme like earth, wind, and fire. It was the band Earth, Wind, and Fire. No, it wasn't. It was actually Earth, Wind, Fire, okay. Water. And it was all beautiful. Oh, sure. He designed the whole thing himself. He actually was a tattoo artist as well. But this was at the time, way back in the day, where people would be like, Steve, how are you going to get a job?
Sleeves.
Like,
tattoos weird thing
on your arms. Like, you're going to have to wear long sleeve. And I just think of now going into a store in 2023, and it's like, I'm surprised if someone working at the grocery store doesn't have a neck tattoo or like moms with, you know, wrist tattoos
tattoos. Probably more people have tattoos than don't at this point. It seems like everybody has one at some place. And now the more and more common ones are becoming face tattoos, which, whoa, man, I don't know. I remember the first time I would see that, it was like, oh man, those are just like, you know, ex-cons or something. But now, no. And especially with like Post Malone, man, that dude totally tatted up his face. Or, you know, Mike Tyson, and these were kind of Mike Tyson was kind of one of the early adopters, I think.
He did. Remember when he got that design over his, and people were just like, he should be locked up.
Yeah, they thought clearly mental. He bit a guy's ear off. This is what happens next. You get a tattoo on your face.
Some rappers have done it. Lil Wayne did it and whatnot. Yeah. And it's just, And it used to just be the old, if you got a teardrop, mm-hmm. means you killed someone.
I killed a guy.
And I cry, but I don't cry all the time. I just represent the cry. It's interesting to think that the toughest, most badass people in the world who, like, killed someone are like so sensitive, like that's the thing that really gets me thinking. When I was choking out that guy and I heard his death rattle, I just was like, I'm gonna get this tattooed.
Oh man, that's so true. I shed a tear every time I think of that guy I brutally assaulted and killed.
Yeah, it's that. And I see it in the mirror. And I remind myself that I shouldn't kill people anymore.
Yeah. Well, it was either that or a tramp stamp, and you know. That's what I'm thinking. I just want to get like butterfly tramp stamp. And there was some movie where a guy had a tramp stamp. It was really funny. I don't know if it was Adam Sandler or there's some movie. I don't remember what it was, but that was really funny.
The tramp stamp. Oh, that was also a brief period of time. Yeah. And all of those people covered, all of those people got away with it because they were like, oh, but I can just cover it up. The only people that see it are the people who really know me or if I like really want to show it.
Yeah.
And like those are the more embarrassing tattoos, I would say, than the people who have beautiful face tattoos, which mean a lot to them.
Yeah.
So.
You know, this has become a big part of the job now of makeup artists on movie sets is covering
yes.
up tattoos.
That's right, because I remember seeing, who was it? The Rock, when he was, he has tattoos all over
his
shoulders.
Like every wrestler has that whole chest thing going on.
It does, yeah. And then, so it must take quite a bit of makeup to cover that up. Every single day you have to sit, cover up your tattoos. Oh, gosh. See, is it really worth it? I did a chaperone thing.
Oh,
just
yeah.
to follow
that,
up
yeah,
to
yeah.
the How last did, thing.
How'd that go?
I haven't been on a school bus in like 30 years. They're pretty much the exact same.
It has that same smell.
They all have that same smell, the high roof, the windows yeah. with the little click.
That you can never really get open very well.
Yeah. Everything's just made out of like industrial. Like, everything
so
is just,
weird.
You can't cut yourself. You can't, there's no bolts exposed, nothing. It's just like a big, like, crazy person room, but it was a lot of fun. I found out why you don't have seatbelts on buses. I had always wondered that.
Like, so you could be thrown
buses?
Clear, you know?
Right. It's to mix the kids up.
Right.
Actually.
Yeah. Why is that? Helps. And they don't have them on public transportation either.
And I was like, why?
And yet they have them on planes. Like a whole lot of good that's going to do you.
So a chaperoning expert on our trip, one of the moms who had done a whole bunch of these, was like, it's interesting you should ask that, because I asked that a long time ago, and I found out the reason why is because if the bus were to be in a pretty bad accident and you were to need to go in and evacuate or get kids off of the bus, it is going to take forever to go through and unclick all of these seatbelts.
Meanwhile, they're all burning alive. Yeah.
While their skin is melting off of their bones and you're trying to like fiddle with a thing. So why not just shake them free?
Yeah.
Have them slam into each other and kill themselves. And then you can just scoop them all up at the end and you don't have to worry about putting seatbelts on.
Wow.
But it does make sense though, I guess.
Yeah, I think, like, if you were to rear in somebody, you would probably just hit the seat in front of you, which is padded, and it's probably not a whole lot of damage.
It was a lot of fun. It was really bouncy. We went to a maple syrup farm.
Yeah, how
farm.
Did that go? Did you draw some maple syrup?
We got to...
That is like the most Canadian thing you could have gone on a field trip for.
It was very Canadian. Maple trees, the maple leaf, like it really is. Learned a lot about maple trees and the season of maple syrup growers. They don't really grow it, they just extract it, is like 3 weeks. So if the weather is screwed up for the 3 weeks that you can get sap from the trees reliably, your whole year is done. So most people who do maple syrup, whatever that is called, sapping, also will do other things. They'll grow corn on their farm, or they'll do something else which will not just pigeonhole them into just doing syrup. And that's also the reason why maple syrup is insanely expensive. And for the American friends who are listening who don't have the insight, this maple syrup knowledge that us Canadians do, if you see table syrup, that's a ploy by Mrs. Butterworth to convince you to have her buttery, syrup is.
It's just sugar.
Right. Table syrup, maple style syrup, anything which does not actually say authentic maple syrup is, it's kind of like the olive oil thing. Mm. It's not actually real extra virgin olive oil. So it's the same thing. You will pay
pink,
for what
pink
you get.
Pink slime burgers and stuff.
Exactly. So, the trip was a rousing success. I realized that kindergarten kids don't care about anything.
Were they interested in the trees, or they were just kind of acting squirrely?
So we went, and they had little they had little stations set up, literally probably a large component of the work involved on one of these farms during this period is bringing kids in and doing tours. Like there was just endless amounts of buses and kids and all big groups moving from station to station. Then when you get to the station, you'd see a maple tree and there'd be a little tap in it and a bucket and there'd be a little, whatever, a little presentation board. And they'd be like, oh, back in the day, these people did this and then we did this. And the kids were more interested in jumping in the mud.
Yeah, of course.
Just like wandering around, like picking up snow, eating mud, like
except when it's on pancakes. We don't want to know how it comes.
So yeah, 83% of the trip was spent like, put that down, please. Put it down.
Brittany, get over here.
Brittany, Ariana, come over here. Jackson, could you please leave? So that was 83% and 17%. They were all interested when they were handing out
samples.
Never saw kids get into a more quiet, straight. Uh-huh. You could have rested a level on that line and it would have been perfectly level and they were so patient and then they got the maple syrup and then some of the kids had the maple syrup and then got that. I don't know if you've had maple syrup. There's like an extra note. It's almost like a coffee note in it.
Really?
Like the maple is like really earthy tasting. It's not like if you were to take table syrup, which is literally just like whatever, corn syrup.
Yeah, high fructose corn syrup probably.
Right. It'll just give you that like, this is literally just sugar syrup, so enjoy. But maple syrup has that sugar hit, but it has like a, like honey kind of has like an interesting kind of note to it. So there were some of the kids that tried it and that coffee flavor instantly were just like, oh,
that's
like
not this. Mrs. Butter.
And the whole trip was ruined because their thought of what maple syrup was ended up kind of being whatever. And there was this one kid, I bless her, I don't remember her name, but she tried it and she just threw it away. And then she stood in the corner with this really mean, like this.
Oh, no.
So I went over, I'm like, hey, did you try that? She's like, I didn't like it. I'm like, oh, well, sometimes there's a coffee taste and da da da. And she's like, I'm really upset because I was really excited.
Oh, see, she's going to be on a therapist couch someday talking about this. Well, let me ask you a question about maple syrup extraction, and I don't know if they covered this in your journey
if
there.
They did, I didn't hear it because I was worried about
so
the
does,
kids
does, does the syrup this is going to sound really dumb does the syrup have to be extracted, and if you don't extract syrup from a tree, will it just explode with too much syrup, or will it start to weep out? And is it bad to extract syrup from the tree? Does it harm the tree?
It does not, because it's literally just kind of like the water. Apparently, it's the juice of the tree, the blood of the tree, as one of the teachers pointed out. It was really funny. We had all the kids there. And she's like, and so the person who was doing the tour was doing her best, but like, this is a kindergarten teacher, so she's going to know how to say something. So sometimes she would like take what the other person was saying and then say it properly
interpret
for the
it.
Kids to understand. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yes, the sap is kind of like the lifeblood of the tree. And what we did, and she stopped and she just looked around. She's like the juice of a tree. Let's call it the juice of a tree. And, not, and we all the parents like looked at her and was like, let's not go with the word blood. Because I don't think extracting the blood from the tree is going to be what all these kids are going like to be wanting to tell their parents.
We're mainlining the tree when we tap it.
However, it's a fascinating fable. They put it as this story of, and we're not too sure if it is, but back in the day when people would throw like throwing axes like whatever, it was an early form of whatever. So they would just practice in the forest going against trees. And apparently there was this one person who was throwing it and it was against a maple tree. And he realized every time he took his axe out that there was like sap coming out of the trees.
He thought,
like, oh,
I'm gonna drink it.
So it's 97% water and 3% sugars or sap or syrup at that point. So it's very, very watery and it just kind of tastes like sweet water. And then you evaporate the water away and you're left with the syrupy goodness. And that's what gets poured into the bottles. And I think it was you need like 35 trees over the course of an entire season or something like that to make one bottle of maple syrup. Because you have to get rid of 97% of the stuff that you actually extract in those buckets. 97% of it is just water, which will be melted.
And then no matter what size jar you put it in, it has to have the little jug handle on it.
It has to have the little jug handle and some kind of maple leaf to indicate that it is maple syrup and not elm syrup. Actually, Steve, Mr. Woodworker, are there any other trees which have sap in them? Well, I guess all trees have sap.
They all do, yeah. And sometimes with pine, which is really, you know, ubiquitous, it's pretty common and can be kind of annoying, but it smells good. That's what really smells good when you walk into a shop that is filled with pine, I think is the best. But, you know, maple makes great lumber. It's super hard.
Maples, trees, have the leaves which are on our flag,
yep.
The syrup which fills us all with sugary goodness, and the wood of said tree is one of the more reliable or the better woods to actually woodwork.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a real light-colored wood, and it's super hard, hard maple. Well, there's different types of maple. But yeah, I've built projects with it, and you can get like bird's eye maple that has really interesting figures and curls and things, and it's beautiful wood.
What's the difference between a softwood and a hardwood? I'm really going to show my ignorance.
So that's actually a really good question, because it has sort of two, it's taken on two meanings. Technically, a softwood is a wood that has pine needles or needles on it. A deciduous tree, one with leaves, is considered a hardwood. So by that definition, like balsa wood, like that really flimsy wood that you make models out of, you know, that you can just break with your hands, yeah, is a hardwood. But
brittle.
Yeah, it's just soft. But by kind of common usage, people will say something is a soft wood when you can, you know, put your fingernail into the grain and it can leave a dent or something. Pine, people would normally consider pine to be, even though it's a soft wood, it's also a soft wood.
But there are hardwoods which are brittle or not,
which are
quote unquote hard,
yeah,
but they are.
Yeah, but I think in general, they're harder, you know, by any kind of scale of how much abuse it could take, and how, that's why most like fine furniture would be made with cherry, you know, walnut, oak, because they don't damage as easily as like a pine table, which could scratch and leave dents and that sort of thing. But we build houses with it. It's a strong softwood, can be strong, but not necessarily hard. I mean, we build houses out of pine,
right? So the term itself is a little misleading.
Yeah,
difference between soft, yeah, and hardwood.
Yeah, yeah,
that's fascinating. The pines and like the needles and the leaves. I never knew that. Now I know that.
There you go. You can be on Jeopardy when that trivia question comes up.
what's the most expensive wood you could buy?
Oh, well, there's exotic woods from all over the world, you know. And
let's say like in the common space of like when someone points to a thing and is like, that's made out of whatever, which is really expensive wood.
You know, I would say maple gets up there pretty high in cost, and walnut, those are some two. As far as like affordable hardwoods, oak would probably be one of kind of the go-to. It used to be like, you know, you look at kitchens made in the 90s and they all had those oak cabinets. It was,
yes,
like ubiquitous, you know, everywhere had those things because they were pretty inexpensive. You could get them at Home Depot, you know, and outfit an entire kitchen with them.
So what is MDF then? I mean, I kind of know what MDF is, but how does that come about and where does it fit into the world of wood?
So that is a medium density fiberboard, and that is a manufactured wood product. So it's like basically sawdust, kind of wood fibers and
compressed
stuff. It's all compressed together somehow through some sort of industrial magic, and it makes a building material for indoor use, because if it gets wet, it's going to kind of turn to cardboard, you know. And it's inexpensive. It's really easy to work with. You can shape it, and you know, kitchen cabinets are often made with that and then have like a veneer or laminate over top of them. It's the kind of material that I think is a pretty good material when it's used right. I think it's also the kind of material that woodworkers love to hate. They're like, I hate this stuff. I would never use that on any of my projects. And I'm like,
Is it a necessary evil though? Would we run out of wood if we didn't?
No. This is a mistake about, I think a lot of people have about the lumber industry, is that a lot of people confuse like clear cutting. You see like the South America, you know, they're clear cutting forests for their lumber and they're just destroying it. Where in North America, Canada, and the U.S., the lumber industry is, it's a crop. It's, and this is why we have plenty of lumber, because these, especially pine trees, are grown in orchards basically for the purpose of harvesting for the lumber. So the more wood we use, the more trees they're going to keep planting. You know, it's like tomatoes or something. You know, if you eat a lot of tomatoes, well, they're going to start to grow some more tomatoes for you to have. And it's a perception problem that the lumber industry isn't doing enough about, because I think a lot of people really feel like you're going to, you know, save the planet by not buying, you know, a 2x4 or some sort of lumber, when there's nothing could be further from the truth. It's a perfectly good, it's probably one of the most sustainable, you know, building materials we have. It's more environmentally conscious than using steel.
So we're getting just down to laziness and then obviously price. It's super cheap, obviously, just to take a bunch of sawdust, mash it together and make that be.
Yeah, and well, that's even cheaper until they can use the byproducts of when they're milling lumber. They use the sawdust, so every part of the tree is used for something. And so they can use the MDF, which is cheap. It's perfectly flat. It's easy to work with. It won't warp. It won't expand, contract, all these problems that wood can have. The only thing is it has no grain, so it's ugly looking on its own. So you have to either paint it or
cover it
somehow. Yeah.
Did you make your own kitchen cupboards, or did you go to IKEA?
No, we had
Oh, you got it actually
remodeled.
Custom.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they make them in house, and they're all made out of, I'm pretty sure it's MDF covered with the laminate.
Oh, so it is. It, like, that's just kind of the thing. You're not really
common,
getting.
It's pretty common. Yeah, you can get wood cabinets if that's your thing, you know. But we didn't want, especially if you get the ones that have like the shaker style, or have like a, you know, it's a frame and panel construction where you see kind of a frame around each cabinet door, and then there's a panel in the middle. But my wife wanted completely flat look with no frame or anything.
Bevels or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it's a real nice contemporary look that we have on there. Yeah. I like it a lot. Yeah.
So it really does come down to the people who are like, hey, look at my kitchen cabinets. They're made out of maple. Like, that's really all it ends up being. Like, they are going to serve the exact same purpose. You legit only spent more money on them to know that underneath the paint or whatever it is actual maple and not MDF.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm getting?
Like, I'm picking up that. Unless you're going to make your cabinets and really show off that wood grain, you know, if you're just going to paint it or laminate it or something, no, use MDF. It's perfectly fine.
Sometimes you'll see those YouTube videos of like walkthroughs of like super expensive houses, or like, oh, this is a $10 million house. And they'll walk through and they'll be like, see all this marble in the entryway? This is Italian marble from the rarest Italian marble mine in the world. It costs $38 million for every square foot, and they have 100 square feet. So there's $380 million worth of Italian marble here. And I look at it and I'm like, you probably could have literally just gotten like something that looked like that.
Totally. Yeah.
Said the exact same thing, literally told everybody the exact same story, and saved yourself like $1 million on your silly little, oh, this is actually this marble. Because every single person that looks at it is like, yep, that's kind of cool. It feels like marble under my feet.
There, this is a really deep topic, I think, that you're exploring here, because the same thing could be said about all sorts of things. Diamond rings.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell me that you could flash your cubic zirconia at anybody and they're going to think it's a diamond. And you know, it's just up to you. Are you going to try to sell them on the fact that it's a diamond? Because people don't ask about those things. You would just have it. You're just wearing a ring. They think, oh, it's a diamond, whatever.
There's an NFL player called named Chad Johnson, a former NFL player, Ocho Cinco, number 85. He is a very excellent football player. And now he's just like a media personality type of person. He has lots of money. He clearly was a huge, you know, star in the NFL. So he made tens of millions of dollars. And then since then has parlayed it into like, he's very, very well off. He loves wearing fake things. And he proudly says it because he knows that he has the money to buy a real Rolex watch, and he was wearing like a fake Rolex watch. He's like, I love knowing that I can have the money to buy it. I love the fact that this one cost me $300 and everybody's still looking at me like no one ever would come to me and be like, that's a fake Rolex. And if they did, I don't care, because again, I could pay for an actual one. But it was very interesting because it's like he got to the point where he could afford it and he realized that it was ridiculous. So he wears the knockoff ones because he realizes everybody's never going to assume that he would wear something fake.
I think there's so much to that. And you know, you could use that money for doing important things or doing things that are relevant to humanity, or even just going on a trip or exploring the world or doing things that you might get more out of than having that marble entryway that nobody's going to know it's marble until you tell them it's marble.
And that's the thing. It's not that the marble sitting in your entryway is always going to be revered to that level. It is only revered to that level when you are grandstanding it. When you're like, did you guys see?
Did you see my marble?
And I submit, if you just want that, just go get some cheap stuff and then just make up a really great story. Everybody's going to believe you. Like, no one's going to be like, did you hear the story about the marble? And did you know the marble in the front's fake? And he just tells this weird story to everybody. No one's saying that.
No.
Everybody's going to be like, they have Italian marble. I've never seen Italian marble, so I don't know what actual. And that's what the thing, that was the question about the MDF and the wood.
Yeah.
One of the first things that you said was, it seems like woodworkers have a huge issue with it. But it seems like woodworkers have a huge issue with just maybe not knowing the inside of their kitchen cupboards is made out of a manufactured material versus an actual material.
Everybody has their own way of flexing. Everybody wants to flex something. I guess the probably the most common flex would be the type of car you drive, because that's something that I guess you can't get a fake Lamborghini or something, you know. So you're going to show off that. And I oftentimes I'll see, especially when I see younger people driving a very expensive car, I kind of think, I'll bet you they're so in debt with that car, and that they live in like a studio apartment, that that's like their whole identity. And it's a weird way of looking at the world when you get down to the ultimate idea of a car is just to get someplace. You know, your Honda Civic would work just as well and probably be more reliable. But somehow we want to, I don't know,
spend extra money in a place where you don't need to spend extra money because you have this weird. And again, the only thing that you get out of it is knowing that you spent more money on
right
it.
And we do the same thing with clothes. Look at clothes.
Yeah,
we have, you know, now there's the whole fast fashion industry, which takes these high, you know, haute couture, I guess you would call it, kind of fashions quickly from the runways of Milan, and then they, the next thing you know, they've done these quick knockoffs at Ross Dress for Less or wherever you might buy these things. So they kind of look the same as the original.
And you're still just left with like, I spent so much more money so that you think something
yeah, I
different.
Don't know. This is actually stuff that I think a lot about how our money seems to be defining us and how displaying our money is so important. And maybe it's just because I've seen so much of it on YouTube. I think really starting with the Logan and Jake Paul.
And more so us seeing that that's the stuff that seems to trend. Like, it's like, I gave my mom a Lamborghini. I take this thing out for the best. And to the point of that we've talked about on this podcast before, I turned this $12 pallet into a $24,000. Yeah. Like,
those
again,
are what get the clicks. People want to see that.
And it's almost like it doesn't actually matter if the person just put a random number there or if the table was actually, because that's the thing that I got down to. Like, you would watch these videos. It's like, yeah, but it's totally subjective, you saying what the value of this is. Like,
right.
But that was the whole lure of it. Literally, the clickbait of it was you saying this big number and me being interested in something because it's expensive.
So I used dollar signs in my latest video, and it went to number 1 out of 10. I made this using 2x3s, and at the last minute I thought, oh wait, I'm going to try the whole monetary thing, the dollars in there. So I said, I don't remember the exact title. It was like using $2.97 studs or something is what I made it out of. So there was actually people think, oh, it's cheap, it's easy. And
the perfect bar stool for your workshop made with $2.75 studs.
There it is. I mean, and it works. And the other thing I've noticed, and I texted you about this the other day, is I just realized that if I keep my face out of thumbnails, the videos do better. It's contrary to what YouTube says. The ones that really work well is just when I have a kind of a close-up of something that is happening, a little action that's happening. But
I'm going to put out there that the engagement on this video is quite impressive. The amount of people who are like, I miss Steve's project videos. Steve, why don't you do more of these videos?
I know.
Yes,
I just did it a month ago. So it's like, I guess they missed the weekly project videos is probably what they really mean. Or they probably didn't see the last one, which is also very common. When you get these people to say, well, I've missed you. I haven't seen anything in the last 6 months or whatever.
Well, that's honestly, I love seeing the mistakes. A lot of people also talked about that.
That's a real common one. Yeah, that's something I've learned. It's been a long time I've been doing that, just leaving the mistakes in my videos. Oh, wait, I just checked. It's down to two now.
Which one took up? Which one had a last minute boost?
So this is 5 days later. The one that was number two is now number one. It's, I turned a 2x3 stud into a serving tray without drawings or plans.
See, and again, a good example. 4 months ago, 190,000 views. A great example of Steve's face not in the. And look at your lowest performing video recently, 10 holiday gifts, and the big old picture of you smiling. No one wants to see you anymore, Steve.
My worst one of recent was the one I posted. The most recent video before this one was my talk about tech and how we need to eliminate ourselves to become.
Yes.
And I thought that it's really one of my favorite videos. I think it has a really important discussion in there. But yeah, it's just a picture of me on the front. And that's number nine.
But you have an arrow pointing to you. And it
I added the arrow.
So... just in case we didn't know what part was unnecessary. I loved watching your bar stool video. I really did enjoy it.
Thank you.
It was 25 minutes long. I can see why you had hundreds of people being like, these are the videos that we absolutely love. I know we've lamented time and time again on this podcast about those videos, but well done. I sent you a message because I was like, this is a banger of a video, attainable project, everything.
It's fun to do these long videos like this, but it's harder because I'm intentionally trying to make them longer without it seeming like I'm just padding it out. So I'm trying to come up with things to say that sound interesting.
Do you check your retention? Because it would be very interesting to check a retention on your 25 or 26 minute long videos versus some of the shorter, choppier ones.
Yeah, they're usually pretty good. I think I would have to look that up, but I think the retention rate, what's an average retention rate? Like 30% or
something.
Yeah. It's probably a little bit around there, a little bit higher maybe, but usually they do pretty well because I think it's the kind of video that once you're in it, you're kind of just like, well, I'm invested in it. If you can make it to, say, 5 minutes, there's probably a really good likelihood that you're going to finish it out. You know, you're kind of in for a penny, in for a pound. I might as well. Mm-hmm. I've already watched this much of the damn thing. Just let it run.
Oh, yeah. I definitely don't want to talk about Ticketmaster.
Oh, God, Ticketmaster. Do you see, you know that channel, the Ryan George? Oh, I sent you that video.
Yes.
Ryan George did a video about Ticketmaster. It was hilarious. God, I love his videos. His videos are so funny. He should be, I have a feeling some of these people we're going to see on SNL at some point, if I still watched SNL. But it just seems like they're really good at what they do, this sketch comedy.
It's so great that there's still people on the platform who are doing like, sketch caught. The one thing I really like is he says at the beginning, he's like, this video is sponsored by listen more after this sketch.
Yeah.
Always calls them sketches.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
I find
I do too.
That if you, because it sets the tone, it allows you to like, you know, you're watching a sketch, like mm-hmm. it defines a video. And I really, really like that. And I love the fact that he has 1.6 million subscribers and releases a video and within one day gets 600,000 views.
It's crazy.
So
Ryan George is one of those channels that because, and I think it's because they're short, you know,
yeah.
when you, I never watched the end. I probably, you know, should, but the his retention rate's got to be bad because he always has a sponsored spot at the very end, which is, I guess, a minute long or whatever. And I always click off of that. I never watch that. But he's one of these channels where I watch every one of his videos when they come out. They're really funny.
Have you ever purchased something off of a advertisement for the purpose of supporting the creator?
I don't think so. No. I can't think of any time that I have.
There was time where Art, Gamer from Mars, was doing a thing with Vessi, and I needed some shoes, so I used Art's code to get a discount on my shoes. But yeah, I was trying to think. Have I ever just heard
use one of those discount codes? Yeah.
Yeah, and use a discount code. I don't need any of the services, to be quite frank. It really only seems like it's VPN services and... That's really it. It's
VPN, yeah.
VPN services are the only, like, every YouTuber who's making
They're really trying to make VPNs more important than they are.
I love seeing the creators do the ad reads to try to sell the value of a... it means you can you could surf the web privately.
You can watch Netflix.
You can watch Netflix in a different...
can watch the Swedish version of Netflix or whatever.
Great. So... and they're like, yeah, that's all we got. You can safely surf the net, and we won't know what country you're from. And when you go to Netflix, you'll get some.
I think these VPNs are kind of the new form of virus software. Because remember, 20 years ago, virus software was huge. It was McAfee and a couple of others, and it was like, God damn, you better have a virus software. Your computer will explode. Something is going to happen, and it's going to explode. It's going to email everybody your dirty secrets. And everybody was so paranoid. And do people still get viruses? I feel like we've talked about this before, but I never hear about anybody getting a virus anymore. And I just use the one that comes with Windows or whatever, and I think it does its thing. I don't know. It's not a thing I worry about. I always feel like you have to click through an executable on an email, and those are so obvious that I don't think I'm prone to getting a virus.
You've never opened up the, hi, darling, I sent this special for you. Yeah, love. Right. And then like a .txt attachment. You didn't open it?
Yeah, I think the virus thing is just switched over now. They're using the VPN. Like you can't, if you go to a hotel and use their Wi-Fi, people are going to just be stealing all of your data.
Yeah, they're going to know all your stuff. They'll get in your bank accounts.
And I don't even use Wi-Fi unless I have to use my laptop or something. But usually I just use the whatever cell service I'm on.
Can I say that we've reached that point where I now don't even like click into the, even when traveling to a different country, because now when we go to the States, we literally just, okay, we're in the States for 7 days. So we pay whatever, it's like $10 or something like that for the whole time. We get unlimited data and unlimited whatever we want to do. But I do remember years ago going to Italy and data roaming and coming back and getting a $1,600 cell phone bill because I was data roaming in Italy.
Oh yeah, I remember those days of roaming.
Remember those days, the data roaming days? Yeah, it was. We were traveling, right? And you just don't. Should I turn on data roaming? I'm just going to be broke. Like, I remember people just being like, my bill was $700 just because I accidentally left data roaming.
Oh, man. I had a guy call me woke the other day on the most unlikely video. And I don't know if that word really means anything anymore. I think it's being sunsetted, don't you think? I don't know if it has any push, because I think it's expanded to just like anything you don't like that somebody's
doing just woke.
Is woke. Yeah. And so it was... And all this was a short clip from my podcast where I was talking to my friend Ethan, who's a carpenter, about the trade labor shortage. And this is a serious problem that not enough people are going into the trades. And so this was a 1 minute short on my basically promoting the podcast episode. And he was just like, well, in 5 years, all these guys are retiring from the trades and we're going to be in a real problem unless we start to think about this and do something about it now. And a guy left a comment. He's like, get back to your woodworking. You stop this woke crap. Like, whoa.
Someone
talking about a trade labor shortage is woke.
Someone doesn't know the definition of the word woke.
I think so. That was the funniest thing. Like, yeah, that's me.
Unquote. I saw a clip trending on Reddit not too, like, literally just a couple of days ago. It was from like a Fox News interview with some person who was on, and literally they love leaning into the whole like woke culture is going to be the death of this and the death of that. And the person who was interviewing this person was like, they used the word woke, and they're like, oh, well, perhaps could you define what the word woke means? It was 30 seconds of the most awkward silence that you could, as this person. Well, I, it's kind of like, and then go up to someone and ask them what woke means. As far as I'm concerned, it means someone who woke. Literally, it sounds like someone who is aware enough that their actions affect other people, and they're aware of how their actions and their beliefs affect other people. Whether or not it falls in line with whatever, I am awake, or my eyes have been open and I am woke to the fact that there are gay people are hurt by flippant uses of, you know, gay slurs. I don't need to necessarily agree with it. However, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, I would be woke in saying, I don't even necessarily believe in that. However, this person should have, you know, I should stop using that because it affects this person in a negative way.
I think these labels are so ridiculous because, and I think that the term probably started a few years ago by well-meaning people who were using it as a label on themselves, but it very quickly became a label that only the other side used against people who they perceive would call themselves woke. But I don't think anybody really calls themselves woke. I think it's just a thing that it's a right-wing word that is thrown out there against people who they do something that they don't like. You know, it's like, you didn't put that shopping cart back. What are you, woke?
Is it fair to say that it might be a slight update to the social justice warrior that we used to talk about? Because people who were just like, I want justice for this, we're literally, you know, sarcastically called social, you're on social media trying to be like whatever, and you're trying to make change through this. And it's almost like this demeaning way to say like, hey, you're trying to do some good in this world. You're trying to make a change or say something.
I just think ultimately all of these labels are so ridiculous because of this culture of everybody has to take sides, and that there's everything you believe in is encapsulated in one thing, and that anybody else is the them.
Right.
And it's this fighting. It's why I don't like using this word allies. When you hear people saying, well, are you an ally? It makes it sound, can't you just be friends? We don't need a warlike situation where you're allies and enemies kind of a thing. But I think everybody lies on this spectrum of beliefs. So it's just, I can't categorize myself in one thing. And I think most people are like that, really.
And I hate jumping from category to category. I just want to be a person who's mindful of other people's feelings. I want to be an empathetic person without having to necessarily
Everything comes down to Bill and Ted. Just be excellent to each other.
Just be excellent to each other.
Yeah.
Right? Because people really, to your point, people really want to expand what your belief in one thing is, and they want you to like also align with all of the other stuff that they believe in. And as soon as there's one thing, which no matter how random it is, I don't think we should be racist towards people. And now,
what are you, woke?
What are you, woke? What's wrong with you? Back in the days where someone brought up actually it was Bryan Cranston in an interview brought up the whole the Make America Great Again slogan that Donald Trump hopped on. And he's like, I don't understand why anybody got behind that, because there was at no point in history where America's been so great that we need to actually return to it. And like, they didn't kind of noticed that this was literally just kind of dog whistling to like, hey, let's get back to those old traditional ways where, you know, the black people were here and the women were over here and the gay people did this and they were all, you know, predictable.
Well, that's the thing is I would want to ask those people, make America great again. When are you talking about?
What period? What
exactly.
Year was great.
What are you talking about there? Because I'm not sure if they really know.
Yeah.
So. Well, there's our politics segment.
Have we talked about anything YouTube related in this podcast?
We should talk about some religion now.
Join us next week when we're talking about sex and money. Whatever, something else. Well, there you go.
I didn't get to anything. I was going to talk. Yeah. I think for the past couple of weeks, we've been wanting to talk about family vlogs, but we'll have to get back into that next week.
Join us next week when we talk about family vlogs and children in YouTube videos.
Oh, man.
Some of the laws and things surrounding that.
Yeah. Hopefully there's going to be some change there happening.
All right. Well, there you go. There's the religion. What are we going to title this episode?
Oh, God. I don't know. I'm going to have to edit this a lot.
Is Steve a Satanist?
All right.
We'll figure something out. All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.